Welcome to the Invest Smarter podcast, where you'll learn about the power of building wealth through real estate and how you can achieve financial freedom through multifamily investing. If you're interested in learning more about investing in multifamily real estate, head over to our website, sastexascapital.com, and take advantage of our free ebook, Multifamily Millions, How Anyone Can Invest in Apartment Buildings. Now, here's our host, Simon Castillo.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Invest Smarter podcast. I'm your host, Simon Castillo, and this is my opportunity to provide you with my best insights into the world of real estate investing, business, and entrepreneurship. So I think there's a ton of value in today's episode. I'm going to be talking a lot about single family properties and strategies and things that you could do to really enhance your investment strategies and do so by also reducing risk. But before I jump into the topics that I want to talk about today, I first want to talk about how I can help you today. And one of the things that I can do is provide you with my resources and my newsletter, my educational materials. Those are all free and available to you right now at sastexascapital.com. I have white papers on investing in real estate, multifamily investing, passive investing. There's an ebook on multifamily investing. Now, obviously, those aren't the only ways to get started, but those educational resources are available to you and they're free to download. The newsletter is free to sign up. Doing any of those things will also place you on our email list where you will get additional insights and tips and updates on investing. Investment opportunities and existing opportunities to partner with us on real estate investments. So again, how I can help you today, first head over to our website, sastexascapital.com, and download any of the free resources, sign up for the newsletter, and join the Invest Smarter community. So what I want to talk about today as we jump into the episode is really, you know, how to use single family properties to build tangible wealth. So whether you are a first-time listener or a seasoned investor, I think this episode will help make you or give you information to help make savvy investment choices in the single family homes sector. So the first tip is a simple little formula, back of the napkin math that has, you know, really helped me over the years. It's a little harder in today's markets right now to find this type of ratio, but I'm talking about the 1% rent to value ratio. It's really simple math. So again, just for sake of simplicity, let's say a property is worth $100,000. Using this 1% rent to value ratio, that means that the rent should fall in the range of about $1,000. Now, it's not a hard and fast rule, but more of a back of the napkin, a compass to guide your investment choices, decisions. You know, real easy to use as an initial indicator if you should even look at a property anymore. Now, in today's market, it's becoming increasingly harder to find properties that fall into this 1% rent to value ratio, and that's okay. Like I said, this is not a hard and fast rule, but just something that if you can do some quick math in your head, if you find a property that fits this 1% ratio, might be something that you really want to look into some more. But secondly, you know, where do you invest? And for me, that answer is also pretty simple. If you're starting out, where should you invest? I would say you should invest in your own backyard. And by your own backyard, I don't mean literally, but I do mean, you know, within the city that you live in. Pick a submarket within your city, because who knows your hometown better than you do? You know the economic climate, you know the political climate, which is just as important as anyone. And you know exactly the types of neighborhoods that you want to target, the types of neighborhoods that have that check all of the boxes. They're low in crime, they have great schools, there's reasonable taxes, and there's infrastructure, roads and highways and things of that nature. Plus, the job markets are strong enough to support market rents. Think about big employers like Amazon. If folks are working there at, say, an Amazon fulfillment center, you know, chances are they're going to be able to afford rent on your properties. Now, let's talk a little bit about strategy. So I will typically go all in on a rehab. And what I mean by all in, think about a high-end renovation as if you're flipping the house. And, you know, the question is why? Why would you do that? It could be a little more expensive, but in the long run, it'll help you cut down on the maintenance costs with that property, you know, down the line. And that's, you know, really, when you think about it, that's a win in our book. And also, if you're thinking about selling that property at any point, think about selling to, you know, not your typical investors, people who are out there trying to find a property to buy at 50% of its face value, but you're wanting to sell your investment property to people like dentists, chiropractors, folks with steady income, high earners, but don't have the time or the ability to really take on renovation projects and make this more of a turnkey rental for them. So they are buying a property that's already renovated, maybe even has a tenant already, and by definition would be turnkey. So buyers in this case would not be, you know, they're not looking to get knee deep into the real estate game. They're just looking to buy a property that's already renovated. They don't want to have to manage a whole renovation project. They don't want to have to go through the hassle of finding a tenant. So with these high-end buyers then that would really find these kinds of properties attractive. Now, kind of an advanced strategy, and maybe this is more for a seasoned investor, but even an investor that has the one property, listen to this. One thing that you can do is when you sell your property, don't sell it through a traditional mortgage. Instead, try to think about selling all cash or seller financing. And maybe seller financing is really the way to look at this, because all cash, it's going to be hard to find people who have the $100,000 that they want to buy that property with. But if you do seller financing, maybe you can ask for $30,000, you know, 30% down payment on your terms at some interest rate, you know, over the next 20, 25 years. So if you do this, where you ask for a down payment and you create the terms through seller financing, you're allowing buyers to not just buy one property from you, but multiple properties with that $100,000 that they may have. And at the same time, those buyers are multiplying their net worth, and the seller financing notes that you're creating is also increasing your passive income over the long term. So in essence, you're becoming the bank. You're the seller, you're creating the financing terms, and you're creating passive income streams that can last decades and not just years. So the backbone then of this strategy becomes finding deals, purchasing those deals, rehabbing those deals, and then at some point putting a tenant into them and eventually selling those properties under seller financing terms that benefit everyone involved. Now, I said that this is a little bit of an advanced strategy because it is. You do have to understand how to offer properties under seller financing. You should have a network in place that supports this strategy, meaning you need to have a good real estate attorney that can draw up documents, legal documents for purchasing and selling these properties. And you'll have to have an understanding that even if you ask for 30% down, there's going to be cases where you may have to actually foreclose on a property. And again, going back to having the network in place, you'll have to have an attorney that can walk you through the foreclosure process, you know, if that ever happens with the property. It's a little more complicated than just evicting a tenant, but again, it is the means by which you can get your property back if for any reason your buyer does not fulfill the terms of their obligation. I think what I'm illustrating here is that as a real estate investor, it's not just about acquiring property after property, but it's really more about making smart investments, protecting your backers, meaning that if you're raising capital, you want to make sure you're protecting those people, and you want to build a system that generates wealth over a long period of time. I've said it many times, you know, real estate is not a game where you can get rich quickly, but it is a game where you can get in and you can build wealth over the long term. And like any other strategy or any other strategies, you know, the key is always going to be diversification. So single family homes, you know, you can deal with banks, you can buy through distressed sales, you can buy through tax liens. But again, it's understanding diversification and how to leverage money in ways that work for you. So the next thing that I would like to talk about and hit on is what I call the four quadrants of real estate investing. And what I mean by that is there's typically a kind of a journey that real estate investors will go through in the world of property investment. And the four quadrants represent a different stage or different strategy in this process. Now, I think the easiest way to look at this is picture this as a path that many real estate investors will walk through, and they will, you know, shift gears as they gain experience, as they gain more capital, and as they gain more confidence. So let's break it down and understand what these four quadrants are in the real estate investing journey. So I think the first quadrant is wholesaling, because I think most people, if they don't have a lot of capital, they don't have a lot of experience, this is where they start. They start off as wholesalers, and this is where they'll dip their toes into the waters of real estate investing. Now, what a wholesaler will do is, you know, imagine if you find a great deal on a property, but you can't buy it yourself because, again, you don't have the capital, you don't have the experience. So instead of buying it yourself, you secure the contract and then you flip that contract or sell that contract to another investor and you collect a fee for that service. You know, wholesaling can be, you know, pretty fast paced. There's typically minimal risk, and investment is in terms of dollars is minimal. You probably need some money to get started in terms of, you know, marketing your services, getting your name out there as a wholesaler. That makes it an attractive first step for a lot of people who want to get started investing in real estate. Basically, it's like being a matchmaker or a broker between sellers and investors who are buyers. And for your services, you earn a fee along the way. I know there's a lot of people out there that have mixed feelings about wholesalers. And that's because, as just like in any business, there's good ones out there and there's bad ones out there. You know, some people will say that wholesaling is not true real estate investing. I believe that it is, because the good ones out there are really excellent at what they do, and they can provide you with a lot of value in exchange for a fee, you know, for their services. They're the ones out there hitting the pavement, driving for dollars, so to speak, driving those streets, tracking down properties, tracking down owners. And if they bring you a property that they've done all the legwork on, it's reasonable to pay them a fee, you know, for their service. Likewise, there's other wholesalers out there that aren't going to be as good. And, you know, over time, I think you'll be able to tell between who are the good wholesalers and who are the bad ones. The next phase, the second quadrant, is the fix and flip. So this is where, you know, maybe you've wholesaled a few deals and you find yourself after you get a couple of wholesale deals under your belt, you start to think, hey, I could make even more money if I took these properties, bought them myself, spruced them up, renovated them, and then sold them for a profit. As a wholesaler, you're looking at this and you're saying, I'm making a couple thousand dollars, a few thousand dollars on a transaction, but the person buying that property is making, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 on that property. It becomes a transaction where, yeah, there's going to be a renovation involved. There's going to be a time crunch. And your goal is always going to be to buy low, renovate quickly, and sell high. And while it can be a lot more lucrative than wholesaling, it also comes with more risk, and you need more capital to take on these kinds of projects. And it's inevitable, in my opinion, that if you do enough of these fix and flips, you will at one point run into a project that loses you money. So more risk, more investment involved, and inevitable that you will at some point run into a project where you just simply, things just happen and you lose money on a transaction. So you have to be able to handle those curveballs. You have to be able to work with contractors. You have to be able to work with lenders. So overall, it becomes a much more complex transaction, but lots of people can make that transition from the first quadrant to the second quadrant. And then as you move into the third quadrant is rentals. So as you continue in your real estate journey, you might start to lean towards wanting a more steady and passive income. And that's where rentals come in. So the allure of making consistent money every month without having to always find and flip properties can become pretty strong, especially after if you lose money on a property that you're trying to fix and flip, you might realize that, hey, maybe I just need to hold a few of these properties long-term and just generate some passive income from these properties. So think of this as a shift from a sprint to a marathon. Whereas if you're fixing and flipping or wholesaling, you're always sprinting because you're always having to find that next property. Buying and holding for the long term and generating cash flow is more of a marathon where you're just building long-term wealth. You are having to deal with tenants and managing properties. It's less about the big, quick paydays and more about slowly accumulating wealth and cash flow. And then the fourth quadrant is one that we talked a little bit about already, but that's where you become the bank. And as I mentioned earlier, this is a little bit more of a sophisticated strategy where instead of dealing directly with properties, you're dealing in the financing of these properties. Now, when I say financing of these properties, there are different ways that you can do this. So it could involve lending money to other investors. You can hold the notes that you created yourself through seller financing, or you can hold other people's notes that you buy at a discount. But I think for this purpose of this conversation, what I'm really going to refer to most often is going to be creating seller finance deals where you sell a property but finance a purchase like a bank would. In that case, you're creating a stream of income that is not only passive, but is long-term. So you could be paid on one property for over 20 years, you know, generating consistent passive income. So this fourth quadrant is all about using money to make more money, often creating a passive income stream without the day-to-day hassles of property management, because you've sold your property to another buyer who's paying you as you being the bank. So they are responsible for all of the maintenance at their property. You are not responsible for the maintenance. You're not responsible for the taxes on that property. That all falls on the buyer. So these are the four quadrants that I refer to as the real estate investor's journey. And for most of us, we started at somewhere in one of these quadrants and moved into the next. Whether you started as a wholesaler, then fix and flip, then rentals, and then you became the bank, and you know, at some point, most of us will fall into one of these quadrants as real estate investors. For you as a real estate investor, you know, this is all about a journey. You know, you go from actively searching out deals to passively generating income through financial instruments and lending. Each quadrant will have its own set of challenges and its own set of rewards. Investors might find themselves operating in multiple quadrants at once. So I think that's also important to remember. You don't ever have to be just in one quadrant. If you are in one quadrant and you move to another, chances are you're going to operate in both of those quadrants. You go from wholesaling to flipping, you may still wholesale properties, even as you work on some fix and flip projects. And likewise, if you own rentals, you may still fix and flip some properties. Maybe you find a property that would make a good fix and flip, but not one that you think would make a great rental. You will flip that property and you'll sell it and you'll take your bigger payday on that. Nothing wrong with that. So as investors, it's safe to say that you'll find yourself operating in multiple quadrants and you'll move back and forth between them as your goals and the market conditions in which you operate change. I think it's safe to say that there's no one size fits all path to real estate investing. It's all about finding which quadrant or quadrants align with your goals, with your resources, and your risk tolerance. So I think at this point, you need to ask yourself, you know, what is your next move going to be? So I hope that you found value in today's episode. I think as you move through your real estate journey, understand that you're never going to be operating in any kind of a silo, whether you start in the first quadrant with wholesaling, fix and flips, rentals, or if you are sophisticated enough to where you can become the bank. I think any of those strategies or a combination of those strategies would serve you well as a real estate investor. So if you know anyone that is also looking to get started investing in real estate, I think this would be a great episode to introduce them to some education, get them to start thinking about what their resources are and what they would like to do with those resources as a real estate investor. And as always, if you have a few seconds, leave us a 5-star rating and a review. That just goes a tremendous way to continue to grow the show and to attract the type of content and guests in the future that you as an audience want to and need to listen to. So as always, thank you for spending your most valuable resource here with me today, your time, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the Invest Smarter podcast, the show that educates you so that you can take control of your financial future. Be sure to rate the show 5 stars and leave us a review. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you automatically receive the newest edition of the podcast when it's released. If you're interested in learning more about investing in multifamily real estate and taking control of your financial future, head over to our website, sastexascapital.com, and take advantage of our free ebook, Multifamily Millions, How Anyone Can Invest in Apartment Buildings. And be sure to sign up for our mailing list to receive exclusive investment opportunities straight to your inbox. It's time to invest smarter. That's sastexascapital.com.